Hey guys, this is your host Nitin Binhani and a very warm welcome to my startup podcast channel Jazair Audio, where we share real stories with real learnings.
So in the second part, which was our previous podcast, we covered that founders should target a niche first and focus on execution, customer acquisition and retention with profitability as the key North Star. Besides, the founder should also extensively use word of mouth, create a performance-driven culture by hiring the best talent and transparently allocating them ESOPs. So let's continue with the last set of questions for both Nitin and Vasant, the co-founders of Profitable Unicorn of Business. Hi Vasant and Nitin, welcome back to the podcast. How will you summarize this overall journey of building off business?
Yeah, stick to your guns and don't deviate too much into what the other people want from you. And think about what you would want to give to the community and you know, obviously listen to others and absorb it and ultimately do what you think is right, right? So if the VCs are telling you to do this instead of something else and you don't think that is right, so I think you need to stick to your guns ultimately, and even the market, right? So in some way, yes, the market will kind of dictate what you do, but at the same time, you need to be aware about what the market will eventually need and what they want, and then take the market towards that rather than just blindly following the market. I think that happens over a little bit over a period of time when you are in the power to influence what the market really wants. Initially, obviously, you need to just be very careful about changing the behavior too early, too fast. But once you are in a little bit of a influential stage, then do define where the market essentially is going. That really helps.
Vasant, do you want to add to it?
Yeah, I don't think I can add any more to that. I think it's just consistency and being at it all the time, right? Whatever Sarantan, we started in 2015 and today fairly large. But even today, you feel like you're day one, right? You asked to summarize the journey, but it somehow, we've never thought of it that way because we realize even today, we're looking at growing 3x this year, 3x next year, right? So I think the journey, there's no end goal, right? You have to enjoy the journey. There's no end goal. So I think the takeaway is that nothing, consistency is the most important thing that matters and just be at it all the time. And surely the benefits of compounding will kick in one fine day.
Would you guys recall any mistakes done during the journey of off business?
Yeah, so I mean, we made mistakes. We made a lot of mistakes and we continue to make mistakes. But the most important thing is to learn from those mistakes and ensure that the mistakes are not repeated. Right. So if you have a culture in the organization, you know, where you look down upon mistakes, then you never be able to grow. So we don't do that. We encourage people to experiment. We encourage people to grow. But at the same time, you know, if they make a mistake, we ensure through processes and systems that the mistake is never repeated again. I think that's very, very important. So if you don't have that feedback mechanism, that feedback loop, then you will struggle to grow as an organization. You'll struggle to scale. And that's something that we've ensured, right? So mistakes are part and parcel of the growth. So you should never look down upon mistakes. They happen, they will continue to happen, but how fast can you learn from those mistakes is important.
So can you iterate the importance of customer feedback for startups?
Yeah, I think, see, what happens is when you're getting feedback, you need to, there are two types of feedback, right? I think one feedback that you get is what's good to have from a customer. And the other feedback that you get is delight, right? Something more long-term-ish in nature. I think the ability to adjust the feedback to ensure that you're prioritizing what's daily makan roti, right? What's the immediate requirement versus what's the long-term requirement? I think that balance is the problem when you take feedback. Because today when we meet a customer, there are four things they want. No one tells you, I want only one thing. And then when they say they want four things, the problem is, when you ask them you want four things, right, then everyone will tell you I want much, much more, right? There's no limitation to what people want. But I think the challenge is to sort of be mature enough to filter on that feedback that's given and what's the immediate pain point and what's good to have but not essential becomes the issue that feedback is not taken. You don't know what you're solving for. So for us, I think that filtration, today there are still 20 other problems that are there in the ecosystems that we are not solving and we will solve for eventually. But how do you prioritize the feedback to what's the immediate pain point versus long-term benefit is what matters. And we have always believed that solve for today's problem, keep building for long-term feedback in the background. But if you're not solving for today's problem, you can't survive or you can't make it big, you know, in this business.
Nitin, do you want to add to it?
Yeah, in summary, what happens is that, you know, people will try and dissuade you. So if you go and speak to your current incumbents or your market participants, they will always tell you, no, this is not going to work. This is not going to work. This is impossible. This is not the way business has been done. You will fail to succeed because of this 1,000 reasons, you know. So obviously you need to absorb that and you need to think, you need to stick to your guns. That's extremely important to do. So that's what we've done very, very well. And I think that's what's kind of worked for us. So these are the challenges. And obviously you have to listen to them. It's not that you ignore them, because it's important to understand what the market is saying, but at the same time, stick to your guns. Intuition really plays a big part. That's what I feel.
Okay. Can you elaborate on some of the key challenges that startups usually face?
Yeah. One, typically working capital is a challenge that, you know, most B2B businesses face. And hence, you know, what we also do is we also partner with them to solve for working capital, because we are a financial institution ourselves, either lending to them or lending to their customers, lending to their vendors, because I think that's a competency or skill set which is very different. And we have built that in-house and we are able to share that, both our balance sheet as well as that skill set, right, of underwriting, looking at customers, knowing what to look at, knowing how much call to take, partner with them so that, you know, they can focus on the sector building and we can focus on, you know, working capital challenges that they have. So in that way, you know, we work with many startups where directly or indirectly we solve for their working capital problems, because whatever sender, we are a full stack financial institution, right? I think that's one thing that we have always done. Second thing is, we have also, at our personal capacities through all founders, we have also, you know, a give back pool where we have typically invested in very early stage seed stage startups, where, you know, the investment doesn't matter, but it's to constantly keep speaking to them and tell them what mistakes we did, right? Mistakes we did about not closing things too fast, knowing when to say no. You always want, you're so inbound in a problem that you need someone external to come and tell you. It's just that you're so much in the problem in your business that it's tough to come out of it. So that's, you know, something that that's there. And I think the only advice that, you know, we tell them is that, hey, I know you'll solve for, in B2B, I know you'll solve for revenue, but honestly, that's not what you should have in mind. Revenue is the wrong metric you're running behind in B2B, because that is the easier of the problem to solve. Ensure that, you know, whether it's profit pool that's available or whether it is about you being frugal in terms of people, in terms of your cost, in terms of your spend, in terms of your whatever, that's your cost, right? Ensure that you're keeping it extremely tight so that you can clearly understand the profitability and path to profitability immediately, so that you can actually improve it over time. I think these are 4 or 5 instant feedback and ways in which, you know, we partner with different B2B companies.
One last thing to what Vasant has said, issue that the founders initially that they face, or rather the mistakes they made, is that they don't go out on the field, right, themselves. They rely on other people to go out on the field and then essentially come and tell them about the problems, and then that's how they figure out. I mean, that's a complete no-no, right? You have to get out on the field. You have to spend time with the customers yourself, and you should not only rely on your people to come and tell you what's happening on the ground. That's extremely important. Now, this is something that the founders should essentially ensure in their daily lives, that they go out and meet customers on almost a daily basis.
Let's talk about technology or platform. How did it evolve at Off Business?
Yeah, so, you know, technology is something that we take very, very seriously, and especially so with the introduction of AI and so on and so forth. So, you know, in the initial part of the days, we were not heavily focused on technology by getting the customers to really adopt the technology. That was a little bit of a mistake that we did. We've realized the importance and course corrected immediately. And, you know, we have now built a platform where we are heavily promoting technology in the B2B sector, that and we're the only company in the B2B sector to incorporate AI into our technology offering, where you know, we built a chatbot, and we built an interface where people, even the farmers, can ask questions in the natural language, something like gehu ka bhav kya hai ya sariya kya daam mil raha hai, Delhi mein kya daam padega. So we are giving this information, and we're doing this across 500 commodities, and we've got about 20,000 live pricings on our AI chatbot. We call it Ved, and that's doing very, very well. So every single day, we are getting about 20,000 impressions on Ved, where a lot of people are interacting with it. A lot of people are asking questions and prices and so on and so forth. So we distribute and democratize the pricing and the news information, because, you know, that's the only way to get engagement in this industry. But we are sort of at the front line of technological innovation when it comes to AI and other new age technologies, and that's kind of worked for us.
So what advice would you give to the B2B founders or startups that are building a marketplace or a two-sided platform?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So I think what matters is, building a two-sided platform is sort of tougher, right? Because you have to solve for both sides. And I think what you need to be very clear in supply chains that you're working with. For example, should you go customer down or should you go supplier up? I think that clarity is definitely needed because you have to find out which market is extremely fragmented, where there is an element of discovery, where it is not, there's a lot of intermediates, whether it's the supply side or whether it's the buyer side. I think that's something that you need to really solve for. For example, we, in the commodities that we work with, like I'll tell you why we, for example, do not try to solve for too much capital goods supply to large commodities, to large companies. Because we know that if you look at the supply side, today, if you give them raw material, we know that market is extremely fragmented. And hence, we know that the customers, SMEs are completely fragmented. So you can build a two-sided marketplace because there's discovery on both sides, there's intermediates on both sides, and there's also trust deficit and layer of credit. So that we are happy to solve. But if you come and tell us that, can you build a supply chain to cater, to make car components to the auto industry? And I'm giving this because that's the largest manufacturing market in India, right? 50% of Indian manufacturing or 45% or so goes in auto. In that market, we will say that, hey, this is not a market while it's two-sided. If you look at the customers are all concentrated, you only have large corporates. You have handful of 10 customers. And even on the supply side, you have few large businesses who work as tier one vendors. So there isn't fragmentation. There is no discovery. So we will never become a platform which is providing capital goods, in the automobile space. Or we'll never be people who are building capital goods in the infra space. We look at the concentration and disintermediation levels across both to even realize that is this an opportunity that's there. And I think that's critical for anyone who's trying to build a two-sided marketplace, that what discovery or value add are you doing to both the supplier and customer that before you, did they not know each other? That's an important question that, they need to answer.
Now, our business has impressive backing from investors like Tiger Global, Norwest, SoftBank, etc. What advice would you give to the founders to secure funding from seed to series A and subsequent rounds?
Sure. The tougher problem to solve is actually at the initial stage, because you have product market fit, etc. That's not to be solved. Luckily for us, I think thanks to, the first round that was there, luckily to Ashish also being on both sides. He's an operator now, but he was also an investor. So the first round was sort of, he was able to leverage his skill sets as he was an operator. He was also an investor with Matrix Partners. So obviously, being on the other side of the table, we had him who's able to add value in the initial round. But I think after that, the only answer that we would give to investors, especially when we were building 2-3 businesses, which is your Series A, Series B, Series C, etc., at least till Series C, is that, hey, look at the team, phenomenal team that we built, tier one, the great pedigree. And second, look at the execution numbers and path to, and profitability. I think those are the only two metrics that matter. People beyond a point, filter through. Yes, market size, everyone knows. Stories, everyone knows. Aspiration to do something big, everyone knows. That's there in everyone. But the differentiation in some of these tougher markets, because for us, the question is, I know market is large. I know it's phenomenal. I know that if you build something big, you'll be super big. I mean, I know this is something to be, but how easy is it to execute in this business? So what matters in a Series B onwards, Series B, Series C, Series D, is that you need to show your execution numbers to say that, hey, I'm justifying. I have a team, and I have a story, which I use my Series A, but I am able to would grow 3x, 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 6 months, year after year. And you're able to see how there is literal nonlinear growth that's coming in the business and due to OPEX efficiency, word of mouth or something like that. I think that's the most important element after Series A, that you show execution to get nonlinear growth in both, very importantly, both your working capital in your top line metrics and bottom line metrics. And in extremely important in B2B to ensure that you're doing this by having your working capitals very tight. That's everyone knows. Investors are smart to know that you can inflate balance sheets to change the P&L in B2B businesses, right? So I think that's how, Series B onwards, definitely was. And then I think the moment you are able to do that, then you become the forefront or the leading player in this space, on both, again, top line and bottom line metrics. And hence the later rounds, which would be big names that you did mention, like the Tiger and the Spank, were able to, that was the easier of the element because, they see proof of what's been built earlier and they're able to come in. That was the easier of the solution. But then I think for us also, in terms of choice of investors, I think it was also beautiful that we were able to work with the right set of folks. We had Matrix who loved commerce businesses and also were motivating us for financial services. We have Zodius, ready to trust us at a time where, we are building two businesses. Norwest, for example, comes with insane experience in financial services. They have taken and invested and, multiple financial services businesses pre-IPO to post-IPO. So that's And hence, you know, the choice of investor was also linked to the business that we were building. They were not esoteric investors who, you know, very specific to what you do. They could add a lot of value, constantly give advice, make referral connections. I think that was the other part of, you know, the choice of investors in between that mattered for us, the way we, you know, wanted to build the businesses.
Nathan, do you want to add to it?
Yeah. So you know, the fundraising at the initial stage and later stage is very, very different from a VC perspective and operator perspective. So from our side, you know, initial perspective, it was all about assembling the great team together. And the VCs also really, more than the idea, they actually back a team, right? So they don't back the idea or they don't back anything else, right? So apart from just the team, they know that if, you know, one idea fails, you can always pivot to another idea. So that was important for us as well in initial stages, get a great team together to do the initial fundraising. Raises for series A and B. But you know, after that, the product market fit and the revenue numbers, the profit numbers, the gross margin numbers, net profit numbers, they all sort of take precedence. So it's important to focus on the team initially for operators and then really focus on numbers and the gross and the net profitability after that to get subsequent rounds, you know, because then the team effect lowers. It is still there, but it lowers heavily. Initially, the team is extremely important. So they don't look at anything but the team, and we do as well. Whenever we do angel investments, the most important thing that we look at is pedigree and the team. After that, we go towards the idea. You know, what is the idea? What is the size of the market and so on and so forth. So that's important.
What are your thoughts on this prevailing funding winter?
See, for good companies, and there is obviously enough dry powders, right? So there is a funding winter right now, but the issue has been that initial valuations that companies have raised with are exorbitant. It's not that there is not access to capital for well-run execution-led businesses. There is enough dry powder out there. But I think what's happened is this is the point in time where people would need to sort of tweak their business model if they already have. If they are sitting on a 6-month runway, they have to make it 20 months. If they are sitting on a 1% profit pool, they have to expand it to 4-5%. So I think this is that type of business. I don't think for good, well-run businesses in India, scale is never an issue. You have to just ensure that you're able to balance other metrics. I don't think it's going to be a problem for any business which is readily listening to these two things, where increasing runway and improving profitability, because there's enough dry powder. But if you don't do that and you expect the last 2 years to behave the same as last year, this year, and the year forward, I think it's only for those businesses, there will be challenges. And that's what they have to mind. But having said that, we also at Top Business are, for us, we value sectorial expertise and we value niche businesses that's being built in a lot of manufacturing and, you know, being built in industry, you know, in specific sectors, which are linked to B2B businesses that we are in. Could be steel, non-ferrous, agri, could be polymers, could be chemicals, could be garments, could be packaging, right? All these large businesses that we are in. And hence, we are also, for anyone in the early part who wants to scale or is facing some issues, we are also happy to look at partnering solutions through Oxyso or Off-Business, where we could look at increasing runways or solving for working capital or just give advice if that's true.
So this question is from Vibhuti Sharma from Deal Street Asia. She requested to ask you, are there any plans for Off-Business IPO?
No, I think, we have been very fortunate, not because of feedback that's come to us from investors. But see, today we are sitting on 3,000 customers on the financial services company and 3,000 customers on, say, the commerce company. We have been very fortunate that we have been able to build to where we are, not apart from investors, lenders, all the other people that obviously have a lot of value, is that we have been able to get constant insights from 6,000 SMEs that, you know, we have met over the last 8 years. And in fact, sometimes you realize that, the input that today a manufacturer in Nimrana, Rajasthan gives you is so insightful on how to build a business that, you know, you realize that it's more, it's extreme value, right? So I think thanks to the nature of business that we have, which is B2B and SME led, we have, and when I say we, I'm talking about 1,500 people collectively across the organization, have a lot of information and communication and that's come out from the 6,000 odd SMEs that we work with, apart from investors, lenders, and other people on board, right? So we have been fortunate to get a lot of summary and information. And our idea is to pass on a lot of this succinctly to aspiring entrepreneurs too. And I think that's the, you know, that's directly towards why we talk about free mentoring. Yeah, so the market right now is not very friendly for an IPO. But then having said that, that's typically for loss-making entities where today they have to solve for, you know, how Yeah, the thing is, for us, there is no, once we are profitable, so I think the metrics are much more attractive because we are profitable, right? So hence, macro events will not affect us too much because your business is throwing out cash, right? That's one thing. The other thing is, typically, there is no immediate need for raising capital because you're very well capitalized. You also have a financial institution where there's enough debt, right? So I think for us, it's a function of the window continues to, you know, be a 12 to 24 month window. And at the right time, we would definitely want to, you know, go ahead with listing, given that we have two entities also. But I mean, there isn't any pressure, neither is there anyone wants a secondary or need for raising capital, or there isn't too much pressure because you're profitable at the end of the day, right? So that's the benefit that we face in hindsight to a lot of other startups who are trying to solve for an IPO approval or whose IPO are on hold.
So guys, with this, we complete our three-part series on how to build a profitable unicorn startup, where both founders Nitin and Vasant spoke about their experience building op business. Nitin and Vasant, thank you for the wonderful insights that you guys shared, and pleasure to have you on board on Jazair Audio.
Thank you so much, and you guys are doing a great job of relaying the thoughts of new age companies and startups out there. Keep continuing doing that, and all the best to you and your listeners. Thank you so much.
No, thanks, Nitin. I think you're doing a great job of ensuring that such insightful, honest questions or intriguing questions can be reached out to more people to hear, because I think there's a lot that people learn just by going through the path that different people have taken, both mistakes and positives. So I think what you are doing and, you know, your constant retrospective questioning definitely, you know, helps a lot. So I'm happy to do this, and, you know, thanks for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Lastly, I want to thank all the listeners who took their valuable time to listen to this podcast. Keep rocking, be safe, and don't forget to share.
Are you a founder of an early stage startup and looking to raise funding? Please visit www.jazairaudio.in. That is www.jasaro.in.